भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
We are reading this morning from the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, 24th chapter, verse number 20.
Maitreya Uvacha Bhavarvashya Jagat Shrashta Kumarai Sahanarada Hangso Hangsinayanina Vidama Paramanyayo Maitreya Uvacha Tavasvasya Jagat Shrashta Kumarai Sahanarada Hangso Hangsena Yanina Dhamma Paramangya Sridhama Paramangyayo
Sridhama Paramangyayo
Maitre.
I'm very sorry, Dineshwara Prabhu. Can you be so kind in this room where I'm staying? There's my black case, and inside there is a book, Coming Back. Can you please bring that?
Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimata Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasati Devam Gauravani Pracharine Nirvase Sasunyavari Askajade Satarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Govakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Actually, in this particular verse, it is significant that Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, goes back with the four Kumaras and Narada Muni, whereas his other sons are staying to be married. Thank you very much. Much more than this, I can't really comment to this shloka, and I thought I would today not comment this verse, but I want to try to write an article today, and you're the first audience, the Yugoslavian audience, who will hear this article. The title of it is Illusions, Reality, and Spiritual Fact. When we speak of illusion, we refer to a phenomena which is of a highly subjective nature, which only exists for the person who is in illusion. It has no other significance than just his own illusioned perception. For instance, we would say a person is in illusion when he thinks of himself to be someone he is not. Like, he may be very proud to be a very beautiful personality, Others, however, see that his nose is too big, or that he is very weak, and that whenever he opens his mouth, only completely ordinary, he talks in a complete ordinary way. One Vedic example of someone who is an illusion is the ass, who thinks, now I will sing a wonderful song, and starts braying, yeah, yeah, yeah. Only he is impressed. Others are shocked when they hear him singing. Reality, on the other hand, we say, is something which is of an objective nature. In other words, many people perceive it the same way as you, for instance, perceive it. Science perceives it, and the scientific process tells us that there's a hypothesis which is verified by an experiment. Now, everyone in every part of the world can make this experiment and come to the same result. For instance, water boils at a certain temperature. Everybody in every part of the world can take a water pot, boil it, and will see that at a certain temperature, we would have to find the temperature, that would be good, the water would boil. It is an objective truth, therefore it is reality. So this was the beginning. With this we want to clarify the termina which we will use in our little investigation. Now, it is very interesting to note right in the beginning that the Vedic scriptures analyze our material life as a dream. They say that what we perceive is not more real than a dream. The only difference to the dreams we are accustomed to is that material life is a collective dream. It's not subjective. In other words, many of us perceive the world in much the same way. I think we are in Yugoslavia. There are certain towns in Yugoslavia, like Zagreb, and other towns, different states. We have so much of our daily experience is experienced or seen in a similar way. So, nevertheless, the Vedic philosophy describes our present experiences as the collective dream. And why this is so, we want to analyze in our lecture. We are confident that this subject matter is of much interest, especially to those who think about spiritual life, and we hope that it will give clues, hints, and possibly inspirations to those who want to take up a spiritual path in order to make spiritual experiences. Now, we will today discuss our subject, illusions, reality, and spiritual fact, by taking three points into consideration. Our first consideration will be the knower. Then we will talk about the object of knowledge, and And last, we will talk about the process of knowledge. See, whenever you want to determine reality, or you want to found, to put it more simple, whenever you want to find out the truth of something, you are operating with three things, with three aspects. One is, first of all, you have to consider you, the person who wants to find out something. That's called the knower. Then you want to see what are you finding, trying to find out. That's the object of your knowledge. And lastly, you want to see what is the process. How are you going to find this out? For instance, in a scientific investigation, there's a scientist, there's the object which he studies, and there's a process. He might take a microscope in order to find out about the nature of things. Or even here in our gathering, there is the knower, that's you. You want to find out what is the subject all about. Illusions, reality, it really sounds contradictory. Then there is a object of knowledge. You want to find out the subject matter. What is he going to talk about? And finally, there's a process of knowledge. You have all come here and you have decided to listen to this lecture, to look at the lecturer, and in this way come to an understanding. So let us start with our first consideration, the knower, or as he is called in Vedic terminology, the Jiva Bhuta. Jiva means living entity, and Bhuta refers to being conditioned by the material elements, or to put it more better, not elements, by the material nature. The conditioned living entity is perceiving reality through his material senses. Now, material senses are limited. We cannot see beyond the walls of this room, nor can we see beyond the horizon. There are certain limitations to our senses, and the senses are certainly imperfect, like someone of us have to wear a pair of glasses. Or we hear bad. So, illustrate the conditioning of our senses, I want to introduce a good friend of me. We have made friendship 1 week ago, and he's living in the pond, and he's ranging number 5 in the Javats top 20. He is a Javats. His name is Sniper Zomo. For those of you who are accustomed to read backwards, it means also Homo sapiens. Mm-hmm. Sniper Zomo. our friend is a conditioned living entity, a Jiva Bhuta, just like us. And to describe to you his conditionings, I will have to go a little bit in the biology of the frogs. He can not see so clearly as you. He can only see the vague dimensions of form. For him, there wouldn't be any difference between a professor, for instance, and a column or a stalk. So these three frogs. He cannot see many colors. You wouldn't impress him with your colorful shirt. He only can see brightness and darkness, and not much in between. Then his understanding of reality is also quite limited. He would, in a different way, yes, he can only see objects who are at standstill and objects who are moving. So these three perceptions build up the epistemology, that means the knowledge which he is able to gather of the Rabbats. If he would give out his knowledge and give up a lecture, all he would say, in other words, his reality he could speak about would be limited by his sensual perception, which we might also call the biofilter of the frog. Now, every one of us, as you will certainly agree, has such a biofilter. Scientific investigations have found out that we are only able to see certain colors. Other colors we can't see. It's just a certain spectrum of radioelectric waves which we perceive as colors. In the similar way, we can only hear a certain range of sounds. Dolphins, for instance, can hear sounds which are lying at a much higher frequencies than we. And other living entities are able to hear sounds which are much more deeper. We just have scratched a little from the gold of sound, and that's our experience of the world of sound. They are very limited, very limited. It's maybe 1 meter of a kilometer. That's all which we hear. According to how our senses perceive the radioelectric waves, we either see colors or hear sounds, and that only in a very limited way. Some people say, in actuality, there are no colors. It's just that we interpret certain radioelectric waves as blue and others as red. Yeah, I know this is for some of you new. So, all this, what I'm trying to say is that we are limited by our senses. However, we have another filter which could be described as a psychofilter. To explain this, I want to give you an example. You are on holiday in Romania. Where you live is an old castle in Transylvania. It is a dark night, the wind is blowing. All of a sudden, just before the door of the castle, you hear sound. I feel a little disturbed in your sleep. Then you hear the door of the castle opening. You hear steps on the floor before your room. Then you hear how your door opens. Then all of a sudden you stare into hot eyes which are looking at you like glowing coals. You are extremely shocked. Where's the Bible? It's Count Dracula, Grof Dracula. Dracula is attacking, and you already feel his teeth on your vein at the neck. This is your subjective experience. What really has happened? Well, it was a stormy night. A sheep, which is resting next to the door, it has its stall, a barn, before the entrance of the castle, has given birth. It was a difficult birth, so she has screamed. Then the wind opened the door of the castle, and it's an old door. It needs a little oil. Then the wooden planks before your door are wet, and they are expanding, so they're rubbing against each other, and it makes the sound of steps. Sometimes this happens. And then the wind opened also your door, and it also needed a little oil. The hotel owners are a little short of money, so they didn't apply oil. And because you were so agitated, the cat, which was sleeping at the foot of your bed, waking up and looking at you with eyes which you could perceive in the night. That's all. But in your mind, you have created a different reality. You have created a horror night of Bram Stoker. Bram Stoker, the author of Dracula, you probably have read this book. So much of our reality is filtered through the psychofilter. Or to give you another example, now please don't look at your wristwatch. What kind of six do you have at your wristwatch? Is this an Arabic letter or Latin letter? Is there no letter at all, or just the? Please tell. Please. You have heard about this example.
No.
Please look. Is it Arabic?
No.
Good. Jai. I'm so happy. I was afraid because you're a good manager, you might know about your numbers, you know. See, he has made a mistake. What kind of number is it, please? No number at all. Most people who make this little experiment, they are confronted with the reality that the thing they look at maybe 5 times a day or 10 times a day, one looks at the watch. I do, it depends. They don't even know what it looks like. Because, for the simple reason, Kripa Dayal Prabhu is a transcendentalist, and for him, this kind of numbers are not important. Other numbers which are important for service, he knows, but this is not really important. It doesn't really matter. So, therefore, your psychofilter has filtered away the thing of the six. We all work, we have our hopes, we have our expectations, we have our values, we have our desires, and because of these desires, we see the world in a certain way. For instance, sometimes a boy desires that a woman is very much in love with him, and he thinks that this woman thinks him to be the most wonderful person of the universe. He imagines like this. But in actuality, the woman thinks his breath smells and he is a Bhutale. This is there. Bhutalam. Bhutalam. The woman thinks his breath smells. He's a Bhutalam. Fool. Isn't it the word? Bhutalam?
Bhutala.
Bhutala. Same word. Bhutala. So, we all make our reality according to these two kinds of filters. Biofilter and psychofilter. And therefore, we can speak of our illusion reality. We think it is true. And many other people might agree with us. This is true. This is a reality. But in reality, it's just a very, let us say, a perverted reflection of the reality. It's just a shadow of existence which we see. The Vedic philosophy sums the two kinds or describes the two kinds of filters which I have mentioned in a better way. They say that the Jiva Bhuta is suffering due to four kinds of imperfections. First of all, the senses are imperfect. Everyone's senses are limited. Due to this, we are in illusion about reality. Due to this, we commit mistakes in our undertakings. And lastly, we have the tendency to cheat. Now, this may not be very easy to understand for you. In fact, many people who listen to this think, well, I'm an honest man. But the tendency to cheat can be further explained as a proclivity to report something in a different way than it is perceived. With the three imperfections which we heard, this is, I think, easy to understand. We do not report things the way they are. However, there's another aspect to this also. When someone describes a situation to someone else, he has a tendency to always make himself look very good. Please watch yourself next time. One always tries to describe how one is very good, how the others are not so good in what they see and what they think, how one has a real understanding of a situation, and how one is actually not never admired. Isn't it? This is a tendency. We always like to think ourselves to be very successful, and when we speak about ourselves, we like to exaggerate a little bit and lie a little bit here, cheat a little bit here, because we just want to look very... If you just ask someone, if you meet him, how are you? Good! He may be miserable, Mr. Miserable times 10, but he is reporting something else. So, this is when this is the meaning of conditioned living entities, he's conditioned by four imperfection. The spiritual philosophy of India tells us that these imperfections are actually foreign to our true nature. In our true nature, we, the spiritual living entity, are not conditioned. Only because we are covered by senses, which are a product of material nature, we are conditioned. Otherwise, our perception is pure. And this conditioning is aggravated by our desire to enjoy this material world and by our attachment to this material world. This is a philosophical point which can be illustrated by a very nice story which I want to conclude the first chapter of my presentation. Once the king of heaven, Indra, was enjoying in the midst of beautiful women, drinking the highly invigorating soma beverage. He was feeling very enlivened and intoxicated by the drink. So much so that when his spiritual master, Bhrigu Muni, passed by, he told him, "Ha! Nice to see you. Come and join our party." So that was an offense, because his spiritual master was a transcendentalist, not interested in materialistic endeavors. In order to teach his foolish disciple a lesson, Bhrigu Muni cursed him spend one life as a pig on earth. And down he went. Pig life. After some time, the residents of the higher planets felt the absence of the king and wanted to get him back. So they sent a messenger. The messenger said, "Your time is over. Your time of humiliation has passed. Come back and be a Kralj." Kralj, isn't it? So Indra, he answered in a surprising way, "No, I'm extremely satisfied here. I have my responsibility. I have three wives. I have many, many relatives. And one day ago, I got 10 new children. They are very handsome. They are very attractive. And they will be very successful pigs. And when I want to go on holiday, no need to travel far. There is my something like in Pragrata, this thing here. There is my holiday park. It is my mud pond, and I just take I run and jump into the mud. And every Sunday there is a feast: rotten apples mixed with urine. I will not leave this, even if you offer me the post of the emperor of the heavenly planets. This is a real enjoyment here. You don't know what is the meaning of enjoyment." But then the messenger said, he couldn't believe his ears. "You are completely an illusion. Your tiny little pig world is the world of death. Don't you know that you are kept just to be slaughtered by the farmer?" And because this resident was a being of the higher planets and had many abilities, he changed his form into that of a farmer. He had a big axe, and he went slaughtering the relatives of Indra. Very drastic. Very drastic. And then finally, Indra's illusory world, you know, it just ping, went like a soap bubble. And he said, "Yes, yes, I want to go back. I want to go back. I want to go back." This is the same condition. Don't feel offended. This, we are talking philosophy, but this is the same condition of the attached living entity. He cannot imagine a world outside of his little sense enjoyment. And because of his attachment, he lives in his illusions reality. Now we will address the second point, which is the goal of knowledge, or the object of knowledge. Now, of course, there are many, many, many objects of knowledge, like you all know. In Bhagavad Gita, it is described that the mind of the of the materialist is many branch, and he has many, many subjects he is interested in: music, fashion, university degrees, politics, trends, new cars, many subjects. But since we are we want to discuss another object, we want to discuss truth, or absolute truth. And we want to establish that we want to talk about the absolute truth, who is known in Vedic terminology as Krishna, or the all-attractive one. I want to tell you a little about Krishna. Krishna is considered to be the absolute truth because he is Satata. S-A-T-A-R-T-H-A. Satata. That means the whole of existence. Krishna exists with three energies. One is the Antaranga Shakti, which manifests the spiritual world. The second is the Bahiranga Shakti, which manifests this material world, including Yugoslavia. And the third Shakti is called the Tathastha Shakti, which refers to you and me and everyone, the Jiva Buddha, the Jivas, not Jiva Buddhas, the Jivas, the living entities. So Krishna simultaneously exists with all his energies, just like the fire simultaneously exists with heat and light. It is not that you first have the fire and then 10 minutes later or an hour later you have the heat or the light. No, it is there all of a sudden. In the same analogous manner, Krishna is involving or comprehending or comprising the whole of existence. He is comprising the spiritual, the total of reality. In other words, this material world on what you see here is also Krishna in a way. It is described that this material world is his separated energy, just like, for instance, you might speak on a tape and this recording of the tape might be sent to a friend in a Split. He actually hears you by hearing your separated, by being in contact with your separated energy, the tape. So in the same way, this world is an energy which is separated from God. But it is godly. It is within the absolute nature of God. Everything is there. When you read in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you find Krishna explaining, I am the taste in water, I am the sound in ether, I am even sexuality which is not opposed to the religious principles. I am the original fragrance in the earth. Like, for instance, you smell that rose flower, which has converted the fragrance of the earth into a nice, sweet, and intoxicating smell. Yes, that is Krishna. And many, many other descriptions show you how Krishna is absolute. In other words, nothing is separate. It's not like in the Christian doctrine where God is only supreme. He's the highest being, but there are other beings who can fight him, like the devil. And he's always worried. Hopefully this rascal is not, you know, stealing my dhoti. or something, is not stealing more souls from me, and so on. So, the concept of God in the Vedic philosophy is that he is all comprehensive, or the absolute truth. Another aspect of Krishna is that he is within the hearts of all beings. He's there as a Paramatma or Super Soul, giving intelligence, memory, and forgetfulness to one and all. He is energy. He is the Super Soul. And finally, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the spiritual world, engaged in highly attractive leelas, transcendental pastimes, with his many devotees. These are three aspects of Krishna: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Many times the question arises, who has ever seen Krishna? When you ask this to a transcendentalist, to a bhakta, he might most probably show you a picture of Krishna and say, this is how Krishna looks like. Well, I have to actually put this better. The question might arise, so erase what was before. The question might arise, who has ever seen Krishna? How does he look like? When you ask this to a bhakta, he might show you a picture of Krishna, painted with many nice colors. The Indian art is very, very impressive. And immediately the second question arises, but this is Krishna? Then Krishna is just like me. You can also paint a picture of me and put it on canvas. The problem the inquirer has with our concept of Krishna, a picture of whom you will find in this little booklet, is that this form seems to be similar to his own form, maybe just a difference in the color of the skin, and he is a peacock feather. He thinks that this form exists in three-dimensional space, just like your own form, which is a certain height, a certain width, depth, it's called depth. You might even think, oh, hopefully my belly will grow a little neck. And a certain width. And this form, obviously, is a material form, and it is limited by the limitations of matter, which is, for instance, one is room. You can only be in one room at one time. Cannot be also simultaneously in a different room. Room or space actually is a better word. And time is there. We are all limited by time. We are now here, and later we might be eating prasadam in another room. There is time and space which are limiting our form. But Krishna actually is not a conditioned living entity like that. And because this is a complicated subject matter, I want to end this chapter by telling again a nice story. It is when Krishna appeared on the planet Earth and he showed his universal form to Mother Yashoda, a great devotee of his. No, he didn't say it. Showed the universe on this has to be erased also. Krishna shows this in a wonderful leela or friend transcendental pastimes. Once Krishna's friend went to Mother Yashoda and told her, Krishna has eaten dirt. So Mother Yashoda said, why did you do this, Krishna? I have not eaten dirt. Why don't you convince yourself and look into my mouth? He opened his mouth, Mother Yashoda looked inside, and there she saw not only a little earth, but the planet Earth. She saw also other planets. She saw the 14 planetary systems, in fact. She saw time, she saw the material elements, the building blocks of matter. And she saw herself looking into the mouth of Krishna, where she saw again the whole universe. Yeah. And time, and herself looking into the mouth of Krishna. Where she again saw point. This is highly amazing, you must agree. Krishna had appeared within the universe, but the universe was in himself. This is almost like saying this glass is in the room, and then imagine I would give the glass to our Bhakta. What is your name? Balibo. A volleyball bhakta, and he would see the room in the glass. He would think, well, this is the effect of taking strange substances in my life before I became a transcendentalist. He would immediately feel, well, this is what do these people do in this glass? It's not possible. Most probably he would take a rest. After this, go out and take a rest. I'm a little... Something has happened. We wouldn't expect such a thing to happen. But Krishna, the Absolute, showed how everything is within him and with him. This is highly interesting. In other words, he is the king of time and space. These are different energies which he controls. He is not controlled by them. So our last chapter, which will be a little shorter, is the process of knowing. Of course, in Vedic philosophy, there are different processes and different results. There is a process of karma, whereby which you act in a good way to attain nice results of your activities, like the good things of life, a good education, a good wife, a nice home with ample facilities for sense enjoyment, fame and success, and so on and so forth. You can attain this by knowing the art of acting. Then there is jnana, the process of jnana, whereby which you actually get to know the true meaning of all things, and you become you see the unity of all things, and the ultimate goal will be to merge with that Shakti to finish the world of differentiations and go into the Brahman energy, which is an aspect of God, as we say. Finally, there's yoga, whereby which you can attain mastery over material nature by controlling different phenomena. Like you can, for instance, get anything you want. You can get anything you want. I'm just trying to remember the song, so because it makes a nice philosophical point. Yes. Or you can control people's mind. Or would you rather take on a form which you like? By mystic yoga it is possible. There were two saints who wanted to enjoy sex life and took on the form of deer, because in the life and the body of the saints, they were living in a celibate life. They took on the form of deers and just did it, and were screaming hurrah and enjoyed the pleasure. Mystic yogis are able to do many things. Here, it would be good to mention the 8 mystical perfections which can be found in the nectar of devotion. So, finally, however, there is a process of bhakti, which is considered the emperor of all yoga. In bhakti yoga, you realize your true eternal nature as a part and parcel of God, and engage in the loving service of God. By this process, you annihilate the material condition, just like fire which annihilates a house. The strong process of bhakti yoga liberates you from material existence and reinstates you in your original eternal relationship with God. Now, like in so the bhakti has a process which of course we call bhakti yoga. First of all, you have to mention also that bhakti, actually the meaning of bhakti is love, because that's the eternal relationship of the small soul to the unlimited soul, the relationship between the living entity and Krishna. So bhakti also has a process whereby which you realize the different the truth, the reality. The process is shabda, or starts with the most essential point in this process is shabda. Now, any process to know anything can be categorized. The processes, maybe we should say in plural, the processes to know anything can be categorized into 3. First, there is pratyaksha, which means direct perception, like you see me and I see you. Then there is anuman, which means hypothesis or speculation. Like we might have heard a few sounds from the kitchen, and from these sounds we might speculate, oh, today we will eat a pizza for the breakfast. We have no possibility to have a direct perception of the kitchen from this room, so we might make hypotheses about it. It's a process of scientific investigation also. They see a few things and then they make up a theory, and the theory goes, unless goes well, unless it is proven differently or wrong. So in the same way, we also have Anuman, and we work with this Anuman, making hypothesis. The last process I want to say is the best process, because there are the least amounts of mistakes. Pratyaksha will be difficult since our senses are limited. We have spoken about this in extensive. Anuman will be different, difficult because our minds are influenced. It's called the psychofilter. You please remember, it may be that you only desire to very strongly to eat a pizza, and the sounds which you hear in the kitchen, you interpret to be a pizza because you are just a pizza freak. This is well possible. So the better, or better means without mistakes, process is shabda. Shabda means sound. You hear someone comes down, maybe Sachi Sutta Jayaprada comes down. Prabhus, today you will eat upma. Oh no, again upma. Yes, there was no more money for this. I'm sorry. We will eat upma today. So you might hear this. So shabda carries information, and therefore a sound carries information. Therefore, it is the best. Now there is a transcendental sound vibration which carries the information from the spiritual world, which carries the information of Krishna. For instance, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And also there are books. Don't think these books are just ink on paper. No, this is transcendental knowledge which has been passed down through the cyclic succession from realized soul to realized soul. And in this way, the knowledge remained intact without being polluted by the imperfections of material senses and the ever speculative mind. It is a real transcendental knowledge. So by getting in conflict with these two aspects of shabda, transcendental sound vibration and transcendental knowledge, which can be also described as sound vibration, your own spirituality will grow. In other words, you are a spiritual being within this apparatus of senses. You are there looking through the senses as the observer, and by reviving your original identity, you will experience your own spiritual qualities. The example has been given of a little wheat seed. That wheat seed may have lied for a thousand years underneath the earth, but when you give some water to it, it will produce a plant. Only recently this often occurs when you find wheat seeds in the grave of pharaohs. Was in old days in Egypt, one would give the passing soul food, and sometimes even they would kill some ladies and put it next to the, not even kill ladies, that's not wrong, they would put the ladies, some ladies, in the tomb so that the pharaoh could enjoy on his journey. Yes, this was the custom. So they found these seeds, and they were fertilized again. In the same similar way, if we apply the power of shabda, or transcendental sound vibration, to we hear that, we will grow spiritually more and more and more, and we will become free of the conditionings of the material senses. A self-realized soul is described in the Bhagavad Gita as being above the influence of material nature. This verse, Manchayo Yabhi. So, therefore, our request to all of you is to come and cross into the come into contact with Shabda. It is a great science of spiritual rejuvenation. Science which is described in books like Bhagavad Gita, Sri Ishopanishad, and also the Nectar of Instruction, Padishamrita. In essence, the spiritual science brings out your original spirituality so that you, as a knower, will be able to know by the process of Bhakti Yoga the goal of all knowledge, which is Krishna or the Absolute Truth. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So, this is now a note. There are many notes for the translator, and my dear translator, please pick up all these notes. I sometimes change things. I want to add another note to you, which you please insert before the story of Indra. So I will now say the note. The late Albert Einstein was aware of this. He said, pure logical thought, or we could even say logical thought alone, cannot give us any knowledge about the empiric world, semicolon. All knowledge of reality begins with the experience thereof and ends in the experience alone. All right, I've come to the end. Do you have any questions now? No. I won't talk too complicated, nor will I have to work like a madman to control my mind. There was something else. Why did I want this to be there? Sorry. Please excuse me for making such noises, but I'm in the mood of a preacher. I've forgotten that I'm under the other sun. Please forgive me. Yes. Another insert has to be put there. And this insert should be when I'm talking about the different radio electric waves which our senses interpret in a certain way. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam. I will read it slowly so that you can also hear. That subtle form exists in the ether has been proven by modern science by transmission of television, by which forms of photographs of one place are transmitted to another place by the action of the ethereal element. If you would be able to see the subtle form within the ether, you wouldn't need to have a television set and save a lot of money. And you could see all the television plays of going on in America or in by America, anywhere, Svetska, and so on and so forth. But our senses are not able to pick up those waves and see those forms which exist in ether. But that's the end of the comment, of the insert, I should say. Thank you, Dinesh. This was very important. I forgot it. Why I asked you to bring it. Thank you very much. Any question? Pitanje? Yes. Kriva Dayal Prabhu.
In the beginning, when you speak about our imperfect senses and how we are imperfect, it was everything very nice. But then when you start about Krishna, then I cannot accept Krishna.
Aha.
Well,
if you adopt the process of Bhakti Yoga, you will see it's Krishna, the absolute truth. Mm-hmm. In other words, you might go to the physical lecture, right, in the university about physics, and they talk things which are beyond your head and beyond your understanding. And you might raise your arm and say, oh yeah, it should be a little bit getting too enthusiastic. You might raise your arm and say, well, this doesn't make any sense to me. Why electrons? Why atoms? Why laws of gravitation? Why weak forces and strong forces? This is all beyond. This is all. You are all fools. Why do you talk so complicated? Then the professor might tell you, my dear so and so, please come in my laboratory, and I show you that there are electrons. I give you a process whereby which you can also see this knowledge. So in the same way, the kami, when you confront him with the concept of absolute truth, all-inclusive truth, and how this truth is Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, he is a little bit shocked. He does not know, but if you tell him, chant Hare Krishna, eat prasadam, be with us, dance in ecstasy in the kirtan, he will, after some time, also realize it. See, kamis always say, I want a proof. But we can ask back, well, are you qualified to understand the truth, the proof? I may give you a whole page of complicated mathematical equations which prove a certain complicated thing, but you don't even know how to, which way to hold the page. You know, you go, is it this way or is it that way, isn't it? So are you qualified to see the truth with the proof? Our explanation of the absolute truth gives a lot of sense. See, when you go to, let us say, you go to Zagreb and the streets are all covered with water, and you ask someone, how did this come? And he says, well, someone spilled a cup of water. No, this can't be. This is Maya. This is not possible. You would immediately think, because it wouldn't give any sense, the explanation. So in the same way, when you ask the materialist, how did this word come about? He says it's an explosion. You think like, are you crazy? It doesn't make any sense. In other words, the source of a phenomena has to be linked with the phenomena. So if you explain the absolute truth as being the possessor of all energies, right? That gives a lot of sense that he is the origin of this world also. Heavy attacks. Nice though, when you preach like this to the Kamis. Especially I found out, I heard in Ljubljana, Maribor, in this Slovenian part of Yugoslavia, they don't mind if you are really direct. They are not minding this. But in other parts maybe they mind, or when you talk about spiritual things, it's all right anyway. Good, thank you for the question, but you are right, for the Kami it will be a little jump, and therefore this is again for the translator, please formulate it a little bit more elegantly, that what we are going to explain now is not some religious concept, but that we are talking now about the absolute truth, something which includes all relative things, in other words, which includes the whole of reality. This has to be there before this part comes, otherwise it is too much of a jump. Okay, this is the end of the note for the translator. Any other question? Yeah. What is your question? On television? This is called sati, whereby which a wife whose husband has died is entering the fire. This was done in the previous time when women and men were on a different state of realization. At that time, the wife was serving her husband, who was as good to her as her spiritual master. He would help her advance spiritually. When her husband died, she would usually enter the fire. There's a verse from this time which goes like this: oh, the fire of separation, my dear husband, the fire of separation from you is hotter than the flames of the funeral pine fire. You understood? Yeah. So that would, I think, no woman today would feel like that. Something fine, finally this old ass is dead. Now I can enjoy his money and his house and marry a new guy. The idea was that she would die and remember her husband. In his next life, she would either, if her husband was not a pure devotee, take on the form of a man and engage in this form in spiritual life, have better facilities for spiritual life, because usually men's intelligence is more for spiritual ideas, whereas women tend to be more emotional. I know nowadays this is completely topsy-turvy. Also men are so sloppy and so much victims of their emotions. Anyway, so she would embrace her husband on the funeral pyre and take on a new form, either as a man, and if the man was a great devotee, she would also go back home, back to Godhead. Now this was a complete voluntary act. Nowadays, however, this has been this practice, which is actually not possible to do because we simply don't feel that way, has become very bad. And sometimes they push women into the funeral pyre. It is forbidden. The Britishers forbade it. They made a rule that sati is banned. However, in some villages, this is still going on. And sometimes women are doing it voluntarily. And I personally think then, if you like that, maybe they can take something so that they don't feel the fire. Something natural. Anyways, I won't commit that our ladies commit. Our Vaishnavas ladies, and anyways, there is no need to even consider this in dreams. But usually it's just done by force. And if not by force, then if she's not physically taken and bound together and thrown into the fire, then by a psychological force, preach to her, be a woman. Usually there are also very evil motives. They want to burn the wife because then they get the money. Something in India, everything nowadays is with money. You know, some money is involved. So it's actually forbidden. Now, if you meet people on the street, you have to really judge who they are and then decide what kind of explanation you give them. Usually when the people are just antagonistic and they are not philosophical people, I would just say it's forbidden. They do this because it's forbidden. It's not that we recommend it to be done. But if it's someone who is very inquisitive, who wants to know, then you can tell them that in a previous age, or previous time, better time, not age, is not correct. In a previous time, this was done because women would feel like that. Even from a spiritual point of view, it makes a lot of sense. However, Vaishnavas, this is important. Vaishnavas never did it, and never do it, and never will do it. Here the lady is not completely dependent on the husband. Here the lady is serving the spiritual master, who is a self-realized soul, and the lady is not under the thumb like that of the husband. I mean, under the thumb is a certain expression. She is definitely serving the husband. A good marriage relationship should be a relationship where the wife can actually be respectful in relationship to her husband, and benefit from the husband. But in Vaishnava, this is more freer. You know, we are all devotees, God brothers and God sisters. Well, very nice Krishna consciousness. Just by coming to Yugoslavia, I'm meeting so many brothers and sisters. When we look at it from the point of spiritual masters, then in relationship to me, many of you are my nephews and whatever, I do not know what's the woman, if she is related, by, because you have a father who is my brother. Most of you. But if we look at it from another standpoint, not the standpoint of spiritual master, but the spiritual relationship to Krishna, then all of us are brothers and sisters. So nice, big family. And more and more are coming and joining the family. Yugoslavia is the most, the best preaching field in the whole world, the whole universe, I would say. Every program, there are so many nice people and interested in questions, and they are all possible factors. This time I feel extremely frustrated to leave Yugoslavia again. I go back to Germany, where I really have to work hard like an ass, you know, to get some people out of just sit down and talk. And I mean, in programs, the people are, oh yes. Yesterday, we sold many books. So when preaching, you always have to know who is asking the question and then give some answer according to the person's capacity to digest. If you say, this is good, burning is good, then she will never take a book, she will never understand Krishna consciousness, and she will think you are loony. Loony, eh? Loony. Yeah. Okay, I think this is everything. And as far as questions is concerned, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Sachinandana Swami ki jai.